study called Man, the Unholy, the Impure. Many, many years ago, somebody said, Jeff Bingham, he can get them to grovel, but he can't lift them up. Wait a minute, he's superb on depravity. That really is not a very nice commentary, is it? It's changed a bit since then, I believe. But we all do know the depraved situation, don't we? You'd agree with me? Well, it's not correct. We don't. I'm not trying to catch you. It's true. Nobody in the world has ever known, apart from our Lord himself, or can know what sin is. Of course, we get ideas of it, you know what I mean? But if in light you see light, you've got to be in light in order to know what darkness is. Can you figure that? Then the nature of sin is a revelation. Now, that you may think, I know what sin is, I've done it. But you don't. Sin has its own inbuilt deceit. The number of times people have told me, when I first did that particular thing, I felt very guilty, but how's that? I didn't feel any guilt at all. Of course not. Guilt has it drugs you. Sin drugs you. However, we're not getting to that today. Now, first of all, we're going to have this beautiful sight. Man. Wasn't he a glorious creature when he was created? In the school, we talked about Christ's transfiguration. And the question was asked, when Christ was transfigured on the Mount of Transfiguration, was he transfigured? Was that his Godhead coming through? My answer was no, it's his manhood coming through. He was the son. That was the son of. That's the true Son of Man. And man must be a very beautiful creature. Sunday school class was once asked, "What happened to Adam and Eve when they sinned?" And everybody was silent. And one little girl says, "Please, miss, all the sparkle went out of them. You know, all of sin had come short of the glory of God." And I think it's beautifully theological. You know, man. See, what is man? The psalm 8 says, what is man that you're mindful of him? And the son of man that you visit him? See, what is man that you're mindful of? When I behold the work of your hands, the sun and the moon and the stars which you've made, I say, what is man? In other words, when I see the vastness of the universe, I think, what's a man? And one of in our school we had this week, one married woman said, she went out and last night I looked at all the stars and the vastness of them, I thought, how marvelous he is, who is so great, to really love me intimately and be concerned with my purity. That's what the psalmist is saying. What is man? Must say, it intrigues me. I can't. What is it that makes you constantly concerned with him and visit him? You know, today we have a sort of psychological kind of Christianity which talks about having a poor self-image and not having good self-esteem, and and all the pastors all got to run around and build us up in our self. Good self-image and self-esteem and teach us to love ourselves and all that junk. You know, the reason we don't have a good self-image is that we're sinners. We've fallen short of the glory of God, so we've fallen short of the glory of man. When I was in prison camp, I told one of the groups here when we were in prison camp that the moment we went in and we realized it was for keeps almost, that incarceration, we just pulled down the blind on the past. And humanity's pulled down the blind on creation. Can't handle it. Just can't handle seeing what it was and not being that now. And when the blind's pulled up, it's brilliant. Let us make man in our own image. Just fancy that. Let us make man in our own image. Can you believe it? They said of Christ, he was the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person. And that's what could have been said of Adam. 1 Corinthians 11:7 says, man is the image and glory of God. Well, I don't wonder that you look at me a little bit unbelieving. You know, in the 9th chapter of Genesis, after the fall, man had been sinful, God said to Noah that if any animal kills any human being, it'll have to be killed. You ever heard of white pointer sharks? It's inbred in man to go out and kill that shark because it has attacked the dignity of man. No, It's attacked the dignity of God. When you strike a man with words or with weapons, you're striking God. When you're angry with a human being, you are angry with God. You say, boy, you're making a lot of sweeping generalizations. That's what they may sound like, but you go through them and you see they're not. Man was a holy creature. He used to walk with God in the cool of the day, didn't he? He heard the voice, or the sound, as the Hebrew, heard the sound of God in the garden. I think it's beautiful. That high and lofty one, the eternal, he fellowships with man. Why does Jesus say, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God? He didn't say, blessed are the pure in heart, for they see God. He said, they're blessed now because they will see. Bit of preparation and whatever's going on in between, right? Being changed from one stage of glory to another, getting set up for that great event when we shall see him face to face. But man was a holy creature. That's what you can't get people to believe. That he was totally holy. And the other day when I said in the class, sinning is not part of man, the stunned look. But Pat, man just sins naturally. No, he doesn't. He sins unnaturally. It's against his nature to sin. Not against his fallen nature. But his fallen nature is not part of his true nature. Can you follow that? And you know, this gives us enormous hope, doesn't it? You know, in the East, they worship saints. You know that, don't you? Because the worship of the saint is not so much a personal thing. It's saying, good on you, mate. You made it. And that means we can make it if we tried too. You know, it's a boost to the human ego. Anyway, can you get the picture of man being holy? I know it's hard, because we sometimes get so despairing at our own unholiness, even as believers. True? I shouldn't say even as believers, because we never did despair at our own unholiness when we weren't believers. We were just full of shame. Right? They heard the voice. God said, where are you, Adam? He said, I heard your voice in the garden. And I hid myself because I was afraid. See, before they were naked and unashamed. Now when you're naked and... it's not you're naked and unashamed, you're naked and defiant. There's nakedness which is meant for the intimacy of marriage, and it's a pity it ever got onto the TV screen. I think there's nothing more mucky than trying to depict intercourse on a TV screen. The thing which is the most private thing in all the world, the moment you make it public, ceases to be what it really is. All right. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Who shall ascend unto the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? Even he that has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully, he shall receive the blessing from the Lord. Isn't that beautiful? It's after that the psalmist can say in that 24th psalm, lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lifted up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. What's the blessing of the Lord? The blessing of the Lord is to be pure. He said it, be ye holy, for I am holy. The old translation, be holy as I'm holy. I used to think it was a matter of degrees, you know what I mean? I'm holy way up there, now you kind of ascend to that now. You be holy, for I'm holy, if I were not. As a matter of fact, one of them has, if you shall be holy, for I'm holy, but I mustn't pinch one of the other lectures. Study. Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Verse 14. Strive for peace with all men. The word should be translated reconciliation. Strive for peace with all men and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one fail to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness spring up and cause trouble, and by it the many become defiled. That no one be immoral or irreligious, like a secular, like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. For you know that afterward, when he desired to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no chance to repent, though he sought it with tears. See, that holiness is really a matter of relationships. It's relationship with God, relationship with man. And it says, follow, strive for peace with all men. Do you have peace with every human being that you know? Well, if you don't, you'd better. I don't mean do they have peace with you. That's another story, but I don't mean that they're responding to your reconciliation. You know what I mean? But are you reconciled to all human beings? You'd better be. And for strive for holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. See, nothing that is unclean or makes an abomination shall enter into the holy city, because it's the holy city. If you're in the holy city and you're impure, that'd be hell, wouldn't it? It'd be Isaiah 6 all over again, without any coal at the end to cleanse you. So that's man. And don't let any root of bitterness spring up. Just turn to Deuteronomy 29. Because we're going to see in the next few minutes that the most impure thing in all the world is idolatry. 29. He says, verse 16, you know how we dwelt in the land of Egypt and how he came through the midst of the nations through which you passed, and you have seen their detestable things, their idols of wood and stone, of silver and gold, which were among them. Beware lest there be among you a man or woman or family or tribe whose heart turns away this day from the Lord to go and serve the gods of these nations, lest there be among you a root bearing poisonous and bitter fruit. One who, when he hears the words of this sworn covenant, blesses himself in his heart, saying, I shall be safe, though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart. This would lead to the sweeping away of moist and dry alike, and the Lord would not pardon him, but rather the anger of the Lord and his jealousy would smoke against that man, and the curses written in this book would settle upon him, and the Lord would blot out his name from under heaven. Very powerful statement, isn't it? If you go into idolatry, you'll be poisoned by it, and you'll have bitter fruit. And the writer of Hebrews is saying, don't let a bitter root. Esau was a secular man. He was an idolatrous man. He was a secular man. And he counted the holiness of God's, the birthright that was to be his, you know what I mean, and the continuity of the covenant was to be his. It didn't matter. He sold it for a mess of pottage, or a pot of message or something. You know, he just didn't figure with him. Said, didn't matter that. Now that, we're saying, is man in his unholiness who just does not see that he is created to be holy and pure. Right, just turn over the page now if you like. Man becomes unholy. Just want to spend another minute or so on man's holiness. In Jeremiah 2:13 it says, my people have done two horrible things. They have forsaken the fountain of living water, and they have hewed themselves, they have forsaken the fountain of living water, and they've hewed out for themselves reservoirs that cannot hold water. In other words, he's saying they have one source of life, and that is God, and he's the fountain of living waters. And the writer of Proverbs says, keep your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the issues of life. Proverbs 4:23. From it flow the issues of life. Do you follow that? You are an under fountain of the fountain of life. We read that in that Psalm 87, Psalm 37 rather, that we draw from the fountain of life, and that's right. Psalm 87 says, all my springs are in you. We are people who flow out. Now, that imagery of the fountain and the water is beautiful. We're all people who read symbols, aren't we? But you try to put that symbol into its reality, and it means that a human being is a person that flows out the very things that God flows out. Goodness, righteousness, holiness, truth, love. They're the five great moral attributes. But God doesn't flow them out because he's got certain things, but he is those things. He's not just holy, he is holiness. Do you follow that? And there's no such thing as love which is not holy, or holiness which is not love. Can you follow that? Not a hard, severe thing that is so transcendent that it doesn't affect us. If anybody is ever righteous towards you, you know what I mean by that, it's a very wonderful experience, isn't it? A person who doesn't try to rook you, a person who will make up where there's been something wrong, you know, righteous, a person who's good towards you, warm and benevolent, you never forget that person, am I right? And a person who is holy, not in that smarmy, cultic, you know, don't do this, don't do that, you know, God won't like you if you do that, not in that dreadful way, But in the well, let me ask a question to illustrate the very thing I'm saying at the moment. Have you ever had some moments of uninterrupted purity? You must have. And I'd bid fair to say that your moments of uninterrupted purity are the most beautiful of all your life. You say love is the big thing, and I say don't make a comparison or put them one against the other, you know, love and holiness. Just, you know, when you have a shower, don't you feel good? You don't. All right. You ought to try one and see that it's a little. All right. Now, one of the things that I omitted to say at the end of the last study, just for time's sake, is that God's holiness is dynamic. It's not just a lack of impurity, do you know what I mean? It's not just a restraining himself from doing things which relate to darkness or impurity. His holiness goes out to destroy evil. Now, unless you see that, and when you say that man is made in the image of God, he's the underfountain of God, when you realize that that Adam and his missus should have been flowing out just sheer holiness and goodness and love, and please, I'm not saying that in a prissy sense, you know what I mean, a very practical sense. And then they decide that they're going to be as God. They're not going to be linked up with any great fountain, you know what I mean, and be an underfountain. They're going to be, they have their own source within themselves. They'll be as God, knowing good and evil. You know what good and evil is, don't you? Don't you? Everybody in the world knows what good and evil is. Untrue. You know, if you make a decision on a particular thing, as to whether it's good or evil, and somebody differs with you, don't you get angry? Come on, be honest. I've never met one human being who budges from his or her discernment of what is good and evil. And since so many of us conflict with each other, husbands with wives and parents with children and children with children and so on, there must be something wrong, mustn't there? The conceit of man to think that he could know good and evil in the way God would know it. Yeah, in independence of God. It was horrible. I've committed two horrible evils. They've forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed out for themselves cisterns, or reservoirs. You don't use the word cistern anymore. It was in the Old Testament, Old Bible. Now it's got another connotation. Right. Now turn to Romans chapter 1. One of the great sources of understanding is Romans chapter 1. Now they knew God, the last bit of verse 20, so they are without excuse, for although they knew God, they did not honour him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their senseless minds were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling man, mortal man or birds or animals or reptiles. So we come on to the subject of idolatry. It's the most potent subject that we could have for human beings today, because we are all by fallen nature idolatrous, aren't we? Everybody is a worshipper, and we worship every second of every day. Worship is essential for us. We'd die without it. What do we worship? The most frightened and insecure people are those who can't find something to worship. You're going to see later that vandalism is man trying to blot out the beautiful. Right? Pornography is man trying to distort the beautiful. You can have vandalism in words and vandalism with instruments, right? You following what I'm saying? And you cannot be confronted with the holiness of God. Do you see that? In any form. So you twist it. You make human genitalia to be something unclean and weirdo and you know what I'm saying? When everything God has created, when you have made everything beautiful in its own time, there's nothing. Well, the world's got a cheek taking hold of sex and all that sort of stuff and make up all that idiocy about it. Oh, the hogwash. And we listen to it. Because we're idolaters. We worship. In the Old Testament, one of the Psalms, it says, they that make idols become like them. They make their idols in the image of themselves. You know what an idol is? It's something that, you know, but Paul said, in effect, he said that really there's no idols, no actual idols. The things we make idols, do you know what I mean? Because God's creation couldn't have idols as such. So we make them. So we don't get our joy and our peace from God, so we image an idol and we put it all onto the idol, say, now this is what you've got to do. You've got to give me peace, you've got to give me joy, you've got to give me security. And then when the idol doesn't, we get angry. And what is more, we find ourselves far from getting the idol under its tyranny. But I mustn't preach about idolatry. I must just get on with the job, mustn't I? Right? That God, when they went into idolatry, can I just underline this, that you've got to worship something. What you worship may change from moment to moment sometimes, but you've got to worship something. Do you follow that? Did you watch on 60 Minutes, the Orange people worshipping their guru? You could have been inside a Pentecostal meeting without any, you know, without any deprecation of Pentecostal meetings. Arms raised, the adoring looks, the rapturous looks, the attitudes of worship. If you've got an idol, you worship it. If your idol is a motor vehicle or a person or whatever, an ambition, well, you're caught up in it, aren't you? True. So idolatry is, in the Old Testament, idolatry was called adultery or fornication. And quite rightly so, because you remember when it says in Genesis, Adam knew his wife and she conceived and had a child? Modern translations say Adam had sexual intercourse with his wife. Oh, zonk, you know. He knew her. That's the place where a man and a woman know each other, really. The most they ever will. It's a fact. It's a union. And that's the same verb used for this is life eternal, that they know you, the only true God. Can you follow that? So when you know your idol, you are transferring that love that God said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, with all thy strength, and thy neighbours as if you are taking that love and you are giving it to a thing or a person or whatever. And that's adultery. God said on one occasion through the prophet, Ephraim is joined to his idols. Leave him alone. You'll never get any sense out of him. Whenever you and I relate as man or woman, whether what you might call illicitly or licitly, nobody is ever rational, let me tell you that. Love is not something you can put into rational categories. That thing, if love may become lust or whatever, but even if it be love, you're not rational. And I know that from years and years of counselling. You can't sit down and talk like a father to people and say, now look, that's not right, you know, just let's be finished with that. Because everybody's looking for union with something that will satisfy and give joy and everything, right? And you're not going to let it go. You're just not going to let it go. Right, so there's man. And you know, in Ezekiel 36:25, it said, I will cleanse you from all your idols and from all your filthiness. Relates idols and filthiness. See that? Now we come to this thing that keep your heart with all diligence, keep it pure, because from it flow the issues of life. If it's impure, the issues will be polluted. But Proverbs 25:26 says, like a polluted stream or a muddied fountain is a righteous man who gives way before the wicked. Nothing can become so impure as a human heart. The heart of man is deceitful above all things and desperately corrupt. Who can know it, says Jeremiah? Nobody. Nobody knows what sin is. We feel the impact of it, right? We don't understand it. Nor do we understand that when you transfer your worship from the holy God to an unholy thing, you've made it unholy. You know what I mean? Nothing is unholy of itself, unclean of itself. You've made it unholy. Do you realize you have made an enormous violation of the holiness of God, and you have created an enormous violation of your true self? You've made yourself punk. Well, you see, the punks knew what they were doing, didn't they? They said, we are becoming punk. At least they were honest. So they go around and they try to make what is beautiful look scraggy and scungy and... Take your hair and give it three colours and put it up in tufts and... You know, anything to hit at what God created. Don't ever let it be like that. Don't ever think you're beautiful if you're a woman. Get angry with God and rip yourself around, and don't ever think you're pure. Go and get pregnant and that'll plame appearance out. Or something, you know what I'm saying? You don't know what I'm saying? Well, I jolly well do. Man, the way we put the human psyche through indignity and degradation is sad, isn't it? And that's what he said, but the unbelieving, everything is corrupt and undefiled, even their conscience, you know. And whenever they see anybody, they're always critical. I know young Peter got the answer. Bless you for that. Bless you. I know you've got the answer to life. I know your forebears messed the whole thing up for you. But that's what your children are going to say about you, and your grandchildren are going to say about you too. Do you see that? That's not the first time. Way back in Ezekiel, thousands of years ago, they said, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. You know, it's an old saying. I'm not trying to defend the oldies. Listen, I don't have to be defended. I'm fantastic. There's no question of defense needed there. Right. Now, the heart of man is deceitful above all things and desperately corrupt. Let's turn to Isaiah 64. And we'll just read from verse 5. Thou meetest him that joyfully works righteousness, those that remember thee in thy ways. Behold, thou wast angry, and we sinned. In our sins we have been a long time, and shall we be saved? We have all become like one who is unclean, and all our righteous deeds are like a polluted garment. We all fade like a leaf, and our iniquities like the wind take us away. There is no one that calls upon thy name that bestirs himself to take hold of thee, for thou hast hid thy face from us, and hast delivered us. Delivered us into the hands of our iniquity. That means abandoned us into the hands of our iniquities. Now that is the principle that Paul brings out in Romans chapter 1. He says, when they became idolatrous, he said, therefore God gave them up, verse 24, in the lusts of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. Do you know what I mean? He gave them up. So they said, now we are going to get our kicks out of sex. So he let him go into it. And you and I know, if we're sensible, we know that you don't. Ultimately, you destroy yourself in that realm. Right? You destroy integrity, you destroy the real thing. You know, I often say that if you try to get before marriage what you can only get in marriage, you get it neither before marriage nor in marriage. It's a fantastic lie, the whole thing, that you can do that and get away with it. The guilt is a very deep thing. The guilt of sexual infidelity and illicit operation is a very strong guilt. God gave them up to the lust of their bodies, to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. He is blessed forever. Amen. I suppose if you get in the centerfold of Playboy or one of those magazines, what's the Penthouse or something, I've forgotten. They put it on TV and say, here's a little girl, she's the pet of the year. You know, she sits there as though she's accomplished something. Make you want to vomit. I don't mean in Pharisaic self-righteousness, but just what we're doing with the human, you know, is that the body somehow or another of itself accomplishes something of itself. Do you know what I mean? And he says, for this reason, see, verse 26, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. Their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural, and the men likewise gave up natural relations with women and were consumed with passion for one another. Men committing shameless acts with men and receiving in their own persons the due penalty for their error. One of our grandsons goes to high school for the first year, and he teaches a transvestite. So he's saddled with a transvestite. And so, well, it doesn't matter whether people are homosexual, transvestites, they're all people and they don't affect anybody. What a lot of hogwash. If you don't affect anybody by your holiness, then I'll be amazed. If you don't make people angry and react to you, then even though you don't try to, I'll be amazed. Of course we affect each other strongly. But here we are, we start to worship idols and we finish up as transvestites. Oh, but that's only the beginning. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a base mind and to improper conduct. They were filled with all manner of wickedness, evil, covetousness, malice, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malignity. They're gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. That's a dreadful list, isn't it, of our evil, of the heart that is deceitful above all things and desperately corrupt. Why don't we face that? Even then we don't know what sin is, do we? I know any lack of conformity to the will of God. So when you said that, what have you said? It's transgressing law. When you said that, what have you said? Whatsoever is not of faith is sin. When you said that, what have you said? Well, straws in the wind. But the nature of evil, I honestly believe that if ever a human being were really faced with the nature of evil, he couldn't, you see, because only in light did you see light. Do you follow? You can understand what darkness is. If you're in darkness, all you can see is darkness. So you don't know. But if it were possible, and it's only hypothetical, if it were possible to be faced with it, I think we'd destroy ourselves as quickly as we could. Now, that's why when our theologian said, never preach, never see your sins except at the cross. Never preach man's sinfulness except you're a person of grace. Or you'll just cast people into the most horrible despair. Well, I found it very difficult last period, and I didn't really try to communicate to you the holiness of God. And you say, well, it's not so difficult to communicate the evil of us, is it? I say, yes, it is, really. This is difficult to grasp, exactly, parallel, difficult to grasp, you see then. In Jude, there are some words there, verse 8, Jude, the epistle just before the book of Revelation. Yet in like manner these men, in their dreamings, defile the flesh, rejecting authority, and revile the glorious ones. And what are they? Verse 12, they are blemishes on your love feast as they boldly carouse together, looking after themselves, waterless clouds carried along by winds, fruitless trees in late autumn, twice dead, uprooted, wild waves of the sea, casting up the foam of their own shame, wandering stars for whom the nether gloom of darkness has been reserved for even. I could find lots of other passages. Well, let's find one. Just Mark 7, that's the words that Jesus said. Probably by this time you're filled up, you don't want any more. Verse 20, he said, what comes out of a man is what defiles a man. Mark 7, 20, 21. For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts, fornication, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a man. The heart that from which flow the issues of life, from that heart flow the issues of death. That flow the issues of purity, flow the issues of pollution. Right? And you say, well, gosh, you're going to give us any more than that? Well, all I'm telling you is that when a human being comes that way, then that human being is abandoned by God to that sin. Not abandoned by God, but abandoned to that sin. That's the only way we will ever understand the need of grace, is when God abandons us to our sin. Some of you have had the experience, haven't you? You have. You've gone through the gamut of your sin. Some of you haven't. Some of you are nice, lovely, suburban people brought up in good churches, and you're lovely, aren't you? But boy, don't you get some vicious thoughts sometimes, and some impure thoughts sometimes, right? We're all in the same thing. Nobody's better than another. Nobody has done it better than another, right? All right, so here we are, and we are impure people. Let's turn to 1 John. We just have to tidy off now for the next 5 minutes. 1 John, and just see some of the things that happen when we are human beings. Chapter 3, verse 10. By this it may be seen who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Could you just ask a question in between? Have you ever killed anybody? Have you ever murdered anybody? I really find it very hard to think how some of these you know, people, all these bombs going off and killing people, and that it's very hard to understand how people couldn't get back on their consciences, doesn't it? You know, I know they rationalise by saying, "Oh, we are what do you call it? We are terrorists because we're in a battle and for good." But you've killed plenty of people. You can slay a person with a word, can't you? A thought. You can vandalise a person's character, can't you? You can write nasty graffiti all over him, either in your mind or in utterance, true? If any man hates his brother, he's a murderer. So it all does figure. He said, "Boy, you're laying it on thick this morning." Oh, no. No, no, we're not laying it on at all. It's there. If Christ said all those things come out of the heart of a man, he never went around talking about sin. Do you know that? Hardly ever mentioned it. He didn't get people all kind of messed up and mucky with their sins. He didn't get them into states of remorse and horrible guilt. "By this may be seen of the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not do right is not of God, nor he who does not love his brother. For this is the message you've heard from the beginning, that we should love one another and not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. Do not wonder, brethren, if the world hate you. We know we've passed out of death into life because we love the brethren." We've moved out of a horrible situation that we hated. And there are two forces in the world. Two forces in the world. And one is the force of absolute corruption, which sets out to defile the human race. And that's us. The last thing I'll say is this. John said it very powerfully. He said, "The whole world lies in the evil one." The whole world is in the grip and bondage of the evil one. Paul said, "You were forced to follow the prince of this world, the course of this world, the prince of the power of the air, who now energizes within the children of disobedience." We are not evil in a vacuum. There's a whole evil system that is seeking to run this universe. And it's called the world system. And its prince and head is Satan. It has principalities and powers. Brilliant, intellectual, celestial creatures that really know how to exploit humanity and bring them into deeper and ever increasing evil. I asked last time, how many of you have read the book of the Revelation? 50 times, 40 times, 30 times, 10, 5. Hardly anybody's read it 5 times. It's an amazing book. Tells you about a system that is run by the old dragon, the old serpent. And he has as his henchperson, a creature called the beast, and he's beastly. And it's not fair to the beasts of the field to call him beastly, if you know what I mean, because they're beautiful. And he's got a whole beastly system set up. You've heard about the mark of the beast, haven't you? And a lot of weird things you'd hear about it too. But it's a horrible system that operates and has infected the human race. And you've probably heard about the false prophet. False teaching that is going through sometimes in churches, it's in the most gorgeous garments. I'm not just talking about ecclesiastical garments, I'm talking about the garments of words. That evil shows itself as apostles of light. And the system called Babylon, which is linked with it, the gaudy whore. And she's the absolute opposite to everything that is beautiful and sweet and innocent and clean and pure, and has an enormous attraction for the human race. Well, that's man's evil. That's the system.